Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess banker can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. I wanted my cake and eat it too. I wanted it both ways. Fame made me a balloon, cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. It was confusing, cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee of Loose Leaf Abuse Inc. Use it as a tool when I blew sleep.
The Bruce Lee of Loose Leaf. Eminem. Yeah. You get piercing lyrics like that from that dude. That's why he's the man that he is. Marshall Mathers. Yeah. Big one last night for the New York Yankees. In case you didn't hear about it. That's right. Walk-off home run by Giancarlo Stanton. He annihilated it, okay? Absolutely, positively annihilated. They were down 5-0. Yeah. 5-0 they were down. And they came back, 1-7-5, on a walk-off home run. You know, when I see that stuff, I think it like, you know, that looks like a lot of fun. You know, and my favorite part is the look on other players' faces when, you know, when they hop over the rail in front of the dugout. That's like little boy stuff. Like winter athletes, like little boys, right? And so I think anybody who's ever played sports, if you've ever been on a team, that moment. So here it is last night. All right, stand by.
Wednesday night baseball in the Bronx. Steve Gordon and the Mariners taking on the major league leading Yankees. Top four, Gordon delivers again. Part of a 2-for-5 night. Two-run single off Chasen Shreve.
We don't care about this. Seattle goes up 5-0.
4-0 game now when Ryan Healy touches up.
Now, this is ESPN that I'm glomming this off of.
Going to beat the Clint Frazier throw. Seattle.
They can sue me if they so choose. I'd appreciate the publicity, actually. But if it doesn't come with the innate audio.
Serve this one up to Aaron Judge. Through the left side.
Lame.
So two runs come in to score.
I picked the wrong highlight, I think.
Judge was 3-for-5 in this game. Raised his average to .281. The Yankees, who had trailed 5-0, now suddenly down just 5-2.
If you've never been in a big stadium when it goes crazy,
it's
the best.
All season for Gary Sanchez,
Gary Sanchez hits a home run.
439 feet.
He crushed it. That's right. He crushed it.
14th of the year. Check out the reaction.
Boom, bitch.
This game was tied at 5, where it was into the bottom of the ninth inning. Giancarlo Stanton, he too has struggled, but not on this night. His signature moment.
Oh, my God. Okay, sorry, that's not what we're looking for this morning, and I'm not going to let it go. Okay, we'll get to the news in a second. So, Stanton, home run. It needs to be the Yankee call, man. Come on. I'll find it, trust me. I know, this Mac, you suck. You suck, this sucks.
And the pitch. Driven deep. To left center field. There it goes. Signature moment. See ya. A two-run home run. A walk-off. and the Yankees win 7-5.
He annihilates this ball. It's like he hit a one iron. Poof. Thing doesn't get 50 feet off the ground, I don't think. And he.
It's fun to be a Yankee fan this summer, this year. On Carlos Stanton.
Woo!
No-two pitch.
The best is the Gatorade goes flying all over the place. Awesome. Yeah, it's a stupid pitch by the Seattle pitcher, too. He's got him either 0-2 or 1-2. Bounce something up there, and he'll swing at it. He throws it right down Broadway, and he hits the living crap out of it. So, yeah. Anyway, all right, so with all of that said, time for us to take a look at the news. That was awesome. I thought they lost the game. Anyway, all right, so headlines, Marine Corps Times. Slow news week, right? How do I know that? Russia argues that the Marine Corps' beefed up presence in Norway is an attack. Still the top story. All right, we have another person attempting to become the Secretary of the VA, and his name is Robert Wilkie, and he will, I believe, be confirmed. He's the inside choice. Been at the VA for a long time. Three looming questions for him, according to Marine Corps Times. Our guy, Leo Shane, wrote this. What are the questions? The 55-year-old bureaucrat is an Air Force Reserve colonel who previously spent time in the Navy Reserve. He is also the son of an Army artillery commander and has spoken frequently about growing up on military bases and challenges his life faced in dealing with his father's combat injuries. Okay. Wilkie has been asked multiple times whether he is in favor of privatizing VA health care. And he will say no every time. But I've learned this about this argument. The question is, well, what do you mean by privatizing? The VA is already privatizing, right? That's what the choice program is. You don't have to get in the car and drive 7 hours to the VA hospital. You can be part of the choice program. That's privatization. All right? But the term has become an ill-defined word within the veteran community, meaning different things to different groups, kind of like denuclearization. It means one thing to the North Koreans, and it might mean something else to the United States and South Korea. About one-third of all medical appointments paid for by the VA last year took place in hospitals and clinics outside of its own system. That number is expected to rise as the department implements a new community care program overhaul in the next year, allowing more veterans more access to private sector appointments at the VA expense. But that's not called privatization. How much, now this is the interesting part of the infighting at the VA. Recently booted head of the VA, Dr. David Shulkin, blamed political operatives within the department for undermining his tenure as the secretary and for trying to advance a too aggressive privatization agenda within the department. Nearly all of the individuals he viewed as opponents are still there. Will Wilkie have a say over who composes his staff? The next question is, can he get anybody to work at the VA? Okay. The VA has seen numerous high-profile and lower-level departures in recent months, leaving a host of vacancies that the next secretary will work to fill. Lawmakers, especially Democrats, have criticized department leaders for thousands of medical position vacancies throughout VA hospitals, saying it undermines care and faith in the system. Again, the VA, I'm not sure it's getting better. They put out a lot of information that say they're getting better. I'm not sure they are getting better. Now, somebody who's older than me will say, Mac, it's oodles and oodles better than it used to be.
Okay.
The jury's still out. Secretary of Defense says the military will house immigrant children if asked. What else is he going to say? No, we're not doing it. A former Marine jumped the fence at the White House, says birds in the sky told him to attack President Trump. The question is, was alcohol involved in this? And was there a hot woman involved in it? A 29-year-old Marine veteran who hopped over a concrete barrier and fence in front of the White House on Monday told authorities he was on a mission from God to attack President Donald Trump and make him cry like a bitch. Oh, my God. Where do we find such men? Okay, the guy's got mental health issues. We're sympathetic, all right? He's part of the tribe, whether we care to admit it or not. Alexander Thomas Minor of Danville, California, made his way towards the White House south fence after hopping the first barrier and shouted, shoot me, towards Secret Service officers, according to a report on the local Washington, D.C. NBC affiliate. Moments earlier, Minor approached Jim Tripp, a Washington State native who was touring the area, and dropped a backpack at Tripp's feet. He calmly said to me, "Want to see if God is real?" Then he jumps over three barriers and starts to climb an iron fence, Tripp wrote on his Facebook page. Tripp captured video of the incident before being forced to evacuate the area. Here's the video. I'll do play-by-play. There's no audio with it. So let me describe the area outside the White House. Okay, there used to be, back in the day, right, there was the street, then there was the sidewalk, then there was an iron fence, then there was the lawn. Right? And then there is that classic White House that we see between the trees, right? I'm not sure if that's the north or the south portico. One of you White House historians can let me know on that. So now it's different, okay? Post 9/11. You can't drive on the street. There is a concrete barrier that would be hip high that is there. And so that's in the middle of the street. So he jumps over that. There's another, it looks like a guardrail that you would see on a highway. That's on the edge of the street. So if you're looking from like across the street at the White House, in the middle of the street is the concrete hip high barrier. On the far side of the street is a guardrail like you'd see on the side of an interstate or between lanes on a divided interstate. That would come like, what, mid-thigh metal, right? And then if you go over that, there's another low barrier. So he jumps all three of those. He does it, but he's still outside the wrought iron fence that looks to be about, if he's 6 foot, this thing would be about 8 feet tall. Want to see if God's real? Charging documents detail how Minor said he had no desire to be shot or to kill the president, but that Trump needs to die, and that birds in the sky were communicating a message from God to make it to the Oval Office, according to NBC4. Minor made additional claims that Trump is an antichrist and that he was tired of being harassed by campaign emails, according to the charging document. He also told authorities that Hillary Clinton and former President Barack Obama were child molesters. Oh, man. Reached by the Secret Service, Minor's father said his son was a retired Marine who could be a paranoid schizophrenic. He filed a missing person report for his son about 3 weeks ago, he said, and went on to describe his son as trained, dangerous, and off the deep end. The report also confirmed that Minor was already under investigation by authorities in Chesterfield County, Virginia, where a woman he had been talking to but never met told police that he randomly showed up at her front door on June 4th. The woman said there was no reason he would know where she lived. Yikes. The following day, Miner sent her between 150 and 200 Facebook messages in less than an hour. For the incident on Monday, Miner has been charged with entering and remaining on restricted grounds, a federal offense, as well as attempted burglary in Washington, D.C. He's scheduled to appear in court on Wednesday afternoon. That's straight up scary. Now, you know what? But it highlights the issue in our country relative to mental health. What's going to happen with him? He's going to be treated like a criminal, not like a crazy person? 150 to 200 messages in less than an hour? What will we do? What will we as a compassionate nation do with him? Send him back out to do more damage, to kill somebody before we say, yeah, you know, that's unfortunate, that person's dead. But, you know, his right to be free and due process trumped your rights to be safe. Sorry about that. You know, we'll send flowers to the funeral. Yeah. He's got his rights. Marine Reserve Unit activated to deploy to Okinawa. Don't see this very often. 2nd Battalion, 23rd Marine Regiment. Fought on Iwo Jima. Fought in Vietnam. We'll deploy to Okinawa, Japan to help pick up the slack in the Corps' efforts to modernize its force. Marines from 223, an infantry reserve unit in the western United States, will be headed to Okinawa in October as part of the Marine Corps' unit deployment program, according to officials. Originally, 5th Marine Regiment of the 1st Marine Division out of Camp Pendleton was slated to deploy in Okinawa, but that unit has been, it doesn't say which battalion, has now been tasked with testing and evaluating the new Corps' Joint Light Tactical Vehicle. As the Marine Corps strives to make the most of its modernization plans, every opportunity will be taken to improve the capability and readiness of our forces at the same time, said Lieutenant Colonel Ted Wong. It is not uncommon for Marine Reserve units to partake in the Marine Corps Unit Deployment Program, but it has been several years since the last reserve unit was activated to deploy to Okinawa. When was it? The last reserve unit that went to Okinawa was 3rd Battalion, 14th Marines in 2011. Yeah, I'm like, when was the last time that happened? Off the top of my head, I can't recall. So that's interesting news. Where do we find these reservists that will go deploy for 7 months, do the work, up all the rest of that? So probably all told, about a year, probably a little bit longer. They're out there, right? Put out a message, say, hey, we're looking for people that can deploy. You know, so there'll be a segment of the organic population in the battalion that deploys. There'll be some because of jobs who can't do it that will leave the unit, and then they'll canvass the rest of the Marine Corps and say, hey, we're looking for people to come back on active duty for a year. Who's game? And they'll fill it up that way. There's a lot of Marines that wouldn't mind leaving their current job. And, you know, there's a lot of employers. It's kind of interesting. There's a lot of employers, especially in the Midwest, especially in flyover country, that are deeply patriotic, that will let employees go to do reserve and guard stuff, and you don't lose anything. Some of them even count that time towards your retirement in their company. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. The chairman of North Korea leaves China as South Korea urges a concrete plan on denuclearization. So, been a little bit unsettling that Chairman Kim, I guess that's what we're calling him now, Chairman Kim, goes trotting down to Beijing every time he gets confused about something. How do I do this again? What'd you say? Yeah. President Xi, are you taking notes, man? Because you're killing me. You're killing my schedule, man. These are my golf days that I'm devoting to you. Help me out, bro. Help me out. Quit crushing my schedule. Good morning, Mac. Hey, I know you love the Yanks. Do you watch any college baseball? I've been enjoying the College World Series as always. If you get a chance, take in Oregon State. Those boys are resilient and ballers. Go A's. Be well. You know, I do watch College World Series. I haven't watched any this week. But I normally watch it. My son's a huge fan, Patrick, who's out in the field right now. But Patrick has gone down to Omaha a couple of times. Once he went down and played in a tournament down there, and that's where he first saw it. And that was in the old stadium, and then they built a new stadium, and I think he's been down there as well. He prefers the old stadium, just for the record. But no, we normally watch it. You know, it's kind of interesting, an aside. Aluminum bats put that tournament on the map because that tournament used to have the craziest crap in the world go on. You'd see guys 5'6" hitting opposite field home runs with aluminum bats. And they would be, you know, somebody would be down 9-2 in the eighth inning. They'd come back and they'd win like 17-9 or, you know, just crazy stuff at the College World Series that would get on SportsCenter. And so the viewership of the College World Series went up and up and up and up and up. Now the ballistic properties of the bats, which became too dangerous, are now kind of knocked down to what wood is. Probably a little bit more than wood, truth be told. But, the NCAA college baseball tournament brings in huge money now, and it was largely done based on television contracts, based on the performance of aluminum bats. So, anyway. Having a vote now on two immigration bills. Here, Mac looks into his crystal ball and says, they will both fail. There you have it. Yeah. Mac predicts the future. Okay. Ceasefire over U.S.-led coalition. Okay, I'm sorry. Ceasefire is over. The U.S.-led coalition downplays a Taliban attack that kills up to 30 Afghan soldiers. Now, Tim Lynch was on yesterday, and we were talking about this incident. And I said, okay, so when you see something like this, is it more a national event based on the ceasefire, or would you say it's probably a local event? And he'd say it's a local event. So interesting. But anytime you see that number, that's not a good thing. Okay? Officials with the Resolute Support Mission. Okay? Kind of interesting, right? It's now Resolute Support. Keyword in there, support. Interesting. Are downplaying an attack on a military base in Afghanistan that marked the first attack by the Taliban since a historic 3-day ceasefire over the Eid al-Fitr holiday. British Army Lieutenant General Richard Cripwell, Deputy Commander of Resolute Resolve, in a briefing on Wednesday with reporters at the Pentagon, dismissed the notion that Taliban militants used the holiday and the ceasefire as an opportunity to gather military intelligence. Earlier Wednesday, Taliban militants captured a military base in the western province of Baghis, killing as many as 30 Afghan soldiers in the process. The West is not as... has historically not has been not as contested as the East. Okay, so if you're familiar with Afghanistan, okay, so all right, so in the center of your clock is Afghanistan. We're going to make it a circle, okay, even though it's not. Okay, stretching from about 7 o'clock on the clock all the way up to about 2 o'clock is Pakistan. Okay, so that's Pakistan. From 7 o'clock to about, we'll call it 9 o'clock, is Iran. So you got Pakistan on one side, all right? From 7 o'clock, when Mickey's hand points to the 7, yeah, and Mickey's other hand is pointing at 2, that's Pakistan. Okay, now take Mickey's hands. One of Mickey's hands is pointed at 7, and the other of Mickey's hands is pointed at 9. Okay, now that is Iran. Okay, from 9 o'clock to about midnight is Turkmenistan. From midnight to about 0:30 is Uzbekistan. No reference to the movie implied. From 0:30 to about, 2 o'clock? That's Tajikistan. Yeah, so there you got it. Okay, so now in Afghanistan, in the center of Afghanistan, in the south, would be our beloved Helmand Province. That's right. The beautiful Helmand Province. South center, okay, of the circle. So right in the middle, there's nothing. Okay? All right, and then Kabul would be off towards 3 o'clock. Okay? So when Mickey's hand points to 3 inside of Afghanistan, that is Kabul. Okay? When Mickey's hand points to 6, that is Helmand. Okay? When Mickey's hand points towards 9 o'clock, okay, you're going to see a city known as Herat. Okay, so you get out here, and there hasn't historically been great fighting in that area. So where this happened was northwest of Herat, okay? So we're looking, Herat's relatively close by geographic standards to Iran. And so northwest of Herat is where this happened. So just to make you smart about Afghanistan. So if you're out and about today and this subject comes up, did you see like 30 Afghan soldiers got whacked? And you're like, yeah, it was near Herat, I believe. I believe the base we're talking about is northwest of Herat, if I'm not mistaken. People will go, whoa, who's the smart dude? Yeah, that would be you. Okay. Anyway, when asked if the Taliban picked out future targets for attack when militants made their way into cities across the country during the Eid holiday, Kripwell quickly disagreed. Candidly, the Taliban that came into Kabul on Saturday seemed more focused on taking selfies, going to the barber, buying ice cream, and things like that. I saw no evidence of any military activity, Kripwell said during his video update. Instead, Kripwell chose to focus on the ceasefire and the positives that came along with it, most notably how it showed the potential for future peace between the Taliban and the Afghan government. Quote, right now, I truly believe that we stand on the edge of an opportunity here in Afghanistan, Kripwell said. There are clear signs of change. I cannot understate the sense of optimism that is in the country at this moment. All right. So file that. He said that they did not use the Tet holiday. Oh, did I say Tet? I meant Eid. Same. Right? But when I hear that, how can you not think of Tet? That they didn't use the cover of the Tet holiday to somehow or other infiltrate or to execute their operation. And then one final story from Marine Corps Times, then we'll take a break. A special congressional panel to scrutinize the VA's medical record overhaul. Now, this has been supposedly coming, for those of us who've been in the military, for a long time. Why we have different systems, do not ask me. Okay? And why, when we went from one system to the other, didn't somebody compel them to sort it out, go to one electronic system so there would be a seamless transition from when you're on active duty to when you're retired, and medically or whatever way you retire. House lawmakers plan to form a new oversight panel to track Veteran Affairs officials' work on modernizing their electronic health record system, saying that Congress needs to closely monitor the years-long process so it doesn't turn into a shit show. Didn't say that in the article. I added that. House Veterans Affairs Committee Chairman Phil Rowe, he's a Republican from Tennessee, just so you know, had mentioned the idea in recent hearings before the panel, but on Wednesday formally announced a process to add the new subcommittee. The full congressional panel will take up the proposal at a July 12th meeting. As the department embarks on the country's largest electronic health record overhaul, we must ensure veterans and taxpayers are protected during the transition, Rose said in a statement. Having personally gone through a transition to a new healthcare record system in private practice, I know how much potential there is for a project like this to be a huge and expensive disruption. Congress has a responsibility to conduct rigorous oversight. That's right. Our elected officials at work the way we love it. All right. Doesn't work like that very often. We'll continue with the news. We'll check the early bird coming up next. There's a couple interesting stories, and I've got a couple interesting emails. More of All Marine Radio on a Thursday coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right one. A grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
That is Colleen getting out of school today, finishing her freshman year. Three-sport athlete. Two of those sports are swimming. Before this year, she was a lousy dog paddler. Yeah, go figure. But it's all good, man.
I love it.
You don't have to be good in sports to benefit from them. They have to teach you what they've taught all of us. Hard work, discipline, being a teammate. Yeah. Go get them, call in. This is from the Associated Press. The Supreme Court says states can force online shoppers to pay sales taxes. In a 5-4 ruling Thursday, in a win for states who have said they are losing out on billions of dollars annually because of a two-decade-old Supreme Court decision that impacted online sales collections. The High Court ruled on Thursday to overturn those decisions. They had resulted in some companies not collecting sales tax on every online purchase. The cases the court overturned said that if a business was shipping a product to a state where it didn't have a physical presence, such as a warehouse or an office, the business did not have to collect sales tax. Customers were generally supposed to pay the tax to the state themselves if they don't get charged, but the vast majority didn't. Right. I'm not sure who devised that system. That's one of the dumbest things I've heard all day. I know it's early in the day, but still, that's stupid. All right. Each year, the physical presence rule becomes further and further removed from economic reality and results in significant revenue losses to the states. These critiques underscore that the physical presence rule, both as first formulated and as applied today, is an incorrect interpretation of the Commerce Clause, Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote in the majority opinion. In addition to being a win for the states, the ruling is also a win for large retailers who argue the physical presence rule is unfair. And I think the term large box retailers should be there. So, you know, retailers like Nordstrom's, May Company, right, that happen to be, you know, at your local mall, this is a win for them too. And in my opinion, it's a good decision by the Supreme Court. Okay, because so without leveling that playing field, why do online retailers get an advantage? They already have, you know, if I want to buy online so I don't have to go shop for it, it just comes to my house, I can do that. Amazon's delivering these days, I can have that done as well. So it's not like it's an embryonic industry that we're going to protect and nurture because we think it'll be good for competition. It is well beyond that, sports fans. It is now putting your local mall out of business. Is that what we want? And I think it's timely because you see more and more Sears closing down stores all over the country. You see other big box retailers modifying operations, scaling back. Yeah. All in response to, you know, more and more economic activity going, you know, via the internet. So, making that field level, as well as the revenue hit that states take. That's not a small revenue hit when, so anyway, the case the court ruled in has to do with a law passed by South Dakota in 2016. South Dakota's governor has said the state loses out on an estimated $50 million a year in sales tax that doesn't get collected by out-of-state sellers. Lawmakers in the state, which has no income tax, passed a law designed to directly challenge the Supreme Court's 1992 decision. the law required out-of-state sellers who do more than $100,000 worth of business in the state or more than 200 transactions annually with state residents collect sales tax and turn it over to the state. So anyway, directly, so it was in direct contradiction to decided law. Email. Mac, you sound like Secretary Mattis. Time for some vodka. Yeah, trust me, it would make the show it would make the show better. So yeah, there you have it. I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. I'm puzzled that it would be a 5-4 ruling, because I think it's a bit of a no-brainer. I'd be curious to what they said in the dissenting opinion, which is not included in the Associated Press story. See how complete my coverage of that little thing is? The dissenting opinion? Yeah, I even included that in my remarks. All right, early bird, top 5 stories. You know, discipline's becoming a major theme of the show. Somebody wrote me an email about it. And I'm not going to dig it up and read it, but it was I'll paraphrase it and say this. Hey, Mac, I like how discipline is an undercurrent theme of the program and how it has ramifications for our broader society. I'm going to read you, so this is the number 5 story, but I'm going to lead with it. That's a broadcasting term. This is in Air Force Times. You're not going to believe where they found that missing Minot machine gun. Yeah, if you haven't heard the story, I can hear you saying, what? All right, an M240 machine gun that was reported missing 5 weeks ago from Minot Air Force Base has been found in an airman's off-base residence. In a release Wednesday, Minot officials said agents from the Office of Special Investigations, or OSI, carried out a search warrant, executed a search warrant, would have been more appropriately written, in an airman's home on Tuesday where they allegedly recovered the machine gun. The release did not contain any further information on the airman or other details, citing the ongoing investigation. The 7.62 weapon was discovered to be missing during a weapons inventory check on May 16th, prompting OSI to get involved. But that wasn't the start of Minot's weapons woes. On May 1st, a crate of automatic grenade launcher ammunition fell off a Humvee in nearby Native American reservation. Minot officials searched for the grenades for about 2 weeks, but their efforts were fruitless and the hunt was called off. The high-profile and embarrassing weapons losses led to the firing of the 91st Security Forces Group Colonel Jason Beers, as well as Superintendent Chief Master Sergeant Nikki Drago. Beers has a new job, though, so, I mean, lest you shed a tear for him, just because his command lost a machine gun and had ammunition fall off the back of a vehicle, right? Which may be indicative of the way that the whole thing operated. He's slated to become the chief of the installation division at Air Force Special Operations Command later this summer. So congratulations to him. Yeah. An M240 machine gun gets stolen? How does that happen? How is your armory inventory done by your armor at the close of business that night and that machine gun not accounted for? We have weapons out. Well, everybody's in. Why is that M60 slot? I'm sorry. It's a Golf 240 M60 machine gun. So why is that empty? Huh? Yeah, that slot there? Why is that empty? Well, let me grab the card. Oh, it's signed out to Airman McNamara. Well, shouldn't all the weapons be in? I saw McNamara about a half hour ago. He was at the PX. Yeah, let's get McNamara in. No, I turned it back in. Sorry, the card's not in. I mean, like, how do you miss a machine gun? And then it winds up in somebody's house? Jesus. You gotta be shitting me. I don't know, man. The whole world needs to go to boot camp, okay? It needs to get its shit tightened up. Lead story in the early bird is a story about a cop Keating soldier. And this is, I'll tell you, this is kind of, let's see. It's kind of an interesting story for, I don't know that it's good reasons. The Battle of Kamdesh has so far netted 2 medals of honor, 7 silver stars, and 10 bronze stars with combat bees, according to a bill before Congress, the soldiers of 3rd Squadron, 61st Cavalry Regiment might be adding a Distinguished Service Cross to the list. Staff Sergeant Justin Gallegos died on October 3, 2009, when Combat Outpost Keating, Cop Keating, in eastern Afghanistan was attacked by hundreds of Taliban insurgents. Now Congress is trying to waive the time limit to award the Distinguished Service Cross, which is the Army's version of the Navy Cross, which is only second to the Medal of Honor, to give it to him. The Secretary of the Army may award the DSC under Section 3742, blah, 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 blah. Here's what I never understood about some of these actions. These guys were hung out in eastern Afghanistan. And if you saw the documentary Restrepo, I mean, they were doing stuff on foot with not a whole lot of air cover that I really did not understand. And so as I sat there and watched Restrepo and the other film that what's his name? It'll come to me in a second. He was on the program, wrote the book Tribe. I said, look, you stole that word from me. I know you did. Fess up. He started laughing. He said, Mac, I didn't steal it from you, I promise. I said, you had to. Nobody else talks about their tribe. He goes, Mac, I swear to God. So anyway, I can't think of his name. But when you watch the documentary, it's like they're doing too much unsupported stuff out there hung out on the edge of the frontier. And it's only after they go bump, you know, they're kicking off this offensive operation and they've got no aviation overhead. You know, that's not the way we do it. If you're going into bad guy country, man, it's stacked above you. It's there. What are we going to do, wait till we bump into something to call something on station? So, I don't. And when you see that, let me just tell you, I cannot imagine in Helmand, and we were there less than a year later, you know, having a pitched battle in which hundreds of guys got there and we didn't schwack every single one of them. Well, Mac, it's mountains. I don't care, man. Guess what? We have things at sea on mountains. So I used to talk to F-18 guy about this, and you know what, man, they'd hear us coming, and they would get the hell out of there, man. And if they ever balled up on us, and they tried, one day we had a day, God, I can't remember how many different attacks. There was something like 28 different attacks that occurred within maybe an hour. So they tried to ball up, we schwacked the shit out of them. It was like, yeah, it's on. Let's do this. Marines in wherever was being attacked, they buckled down. They got it on. We had two guys wounded by a grenade that got thrown over a wall. The rest of the time, the air officers, our fires officers, just being Marines and just crushing it. It was awesome. And so I've seen these stories and you're like, what were they doing up there, man? I don't know. So anyway, God bless Staff Sergeant Justin Gallegos, killed in action. And so anyway, that's in the news today. this story. Ex-soldier who shot up Afghan village may seek clemency from president, according to his lawyer. Robert Bales, the former Army staff sergeant who killed 16 Afghan civilians, including 7 children, will likely ask the president to commute his life sentence once he exhausts his legal appeals for one of the nation's most notorious war crimes. Bales' attorney, John Maher of Chicago, said earlier this month that if he runs out of options in the courts, he will seek executive clemency from the president. Bales could face a receptive audience if President Donald Trump still occupies the Oval Office when his appeals are complete. Maher says Bales will likely request a commutation of the life without parole sentence, quote, to provide a chance to one day be returned to his wife and children. In the early morning hours of March 11, 2012, Bales left his base at Camp Bellamy in Kandahar, armed with an M4 carbine and M9 pistol, and headed to a nearby village where he killed 4 people, including a child, assaulted 6 others. He returned to base for more ammunition before walking to another village where he killed a dozen more, mainly women and children, in their beds. It was his first tour in Afghanistan, following 3 in Iraq. According to court documents, he had been drinking that evening and taken sleeping pills and was also using anabolic steroids, known to cause mood swings. He pled guilty in June of 2013 and was sentenced to life without parole in the maximum security prison at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Bales' next step is the Supreme Court. In a petition filed on May 19th, Bales' attorneys argued that evidence was withheld during the former soldier's trial that could have influenced a sentence. Prosecutors of position said failed to disclose that service members, including Bales, were ordered to take an anti-malaria medication, mefloquine, that is known to cause nightmares, anxiety, anger, and psychosis in some patients. It also alleges that the prosecution failed to divulge evidence that 3 relatives of Bales' victims who testified in his sentencing were linked to roadside bomb attacks on coalition forces, according to U.S. military databases, or had been detained. Well, what does that have to do? How does one guy leave a firm base? I don't even understand how that happens. The Army judges rejected the mefloquine argument as speculative. They also found the argument that prosecution falsely portrayed several witnesses as farmers rather than known associates to IED events or the Taliban was unfounded. The ruling was affirmed by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces in February. Retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Jay Morse, who led the government's prosecution team in 2013, said the appeal petition contained embellishments and flat-out mistruths. Morse said the defense has misrepresented how mefloquine became an issue, adding that the government disclosed Bates' medical record, furnished all the information to subject matter experts, including psychiatrists, psychologists, that was requested by defense team members. None of them raised the issue. There continues to be zero evidence that Bales was provided mefloquine. The Supreme Court likely won't take the case, according to Eric Montalvo, a former Marine Corps attorney who runs a civilian defense firm in Washington, D.C., that is not affiliated with the case. When you have an individual who said, "I killed women and children and tried to burn their bodies because they were evidence," it's a crime and a cover-up, which gives you a sense of consciousness. That's not psychosis. Moore said he would not be surprised if Bales eventually requests a presidential pardon because the original case, in Moore's opinion, produced few, if any, errors of appeal. The case is watertight. From the beginning, the goal didn't include just winning. It included justice, doing right, and following the rules. Yeah, I remember reading that and just going, are you kidding me? I still don't understand how somebody walks off a firm base. How do you do that? You have entry control points, ECPs. You have a guard force. People, it's not like people just walk in and out of the base by themselves, armed. Hey, man, where are you going? No place. Just going to go hang out in the village. Yeah, that doesn't really happen. Right. Another number four story. I already read number five. Missing machine gun found at the home of a Minot airman. That again, like what in the hell? What in the hell? Yeah, you know, I'm here's an email. Mac, you're being fairly critical of everybody today. Yeah, sorry about that. I don't understand how when you're conducting offensive operations, you don't have aviation assets on hand until somebody gets mortally wounded. I don't understand that. I don't understand how you walk outside. We had one guy walk off a firm base in Iraq that I can recall. And he told the guard, he hopped over the fence, he left his helmet, blackjack, and weapon, and he says, I'm done with this. Oh, no, no, he didn't have a weapon because he was acting weird, and his squad leader took his weapon from him. And he said, this is bullshit, I'm leaving. And with that, he jumped over a wall, and he took off. They ran to catch him, but they couldn't. They couldn't get him in time. So the whole battalion was out looking. And so if you can imagine this, RCT-5's Combat Operations Center at Camp Fallujah, you know, now we know that if Al-Qaeda, this is Iraq, so it's Al-Qaeda, if Al-Qaeda or the locals see him, they're going to yoke him up. He's going to be on TV getting his head sawed off, right? As is the Marine Corps. So the whole battalion acts as a QRF. They all go looking for him. So the deputy MEF commander at the time, Brigadier General R.B. Neller. Regimental commander, Larry Nicholson. They're friends. All of a sudden, behind me, I hear somebody yell, attention on deck. I turn. I don't go to a position of attention because I'm working. And I look. Here's Neller, my battalion commander. I'm his favorite company commander. He looks, and he just walks over to me and goes, what's going on? I said, they haven't found him yet. We've got drone footage on. Now, I believe it was Sergeant Major Kent. He comes rolling in. It was either Kent or Green, one of them. He comes rolling in. And now he goes over, and he's looking at the monitor, and he's yelling, tell him to do this, tell him to do that. And Neller's standing next to me. And he goes, he's right there, they're going to walk past him. I'm like, sir, could you make him stop? I mean, I know he's a sergeant major and all that, but you know, we're not conducting a shit show. The battalion's watching the same thing we are. And Neller looks at me, and he goes, so you want us to leave? I said, no, you can stay, but, I mean, look, the battalion's got it. We're in oversight, you know, but I'm not going to start telling them to turn to the right and walk, all right? They're watching it. They got it. And he looks at me, and he said, part of me doesn't like you. He goes, I got it. So he goes walking over, and he's cool. He walks over to the monitor. He's standing there looking at with Sergeant Major, and then, you know, I see him, like, lean over, and he says something to Sergeant Major. Sergeant Major, like, shrugs and smiles, like, yeah. All right, I know, I'm out of line. Just trying to help, right? Just trying to help. So you had Nicholson in there. You had Neller, Sergeant Major of the MEF, in the regimental COC, screaming and yelling. And so you see these Marines moving at night, and this Marine had curled up in some kind of a hole or depression in the earth. So they're looking, right? Well, they're looking with their night vision goggles, and when somebody goes into a black hole like that, it's hard to see. So as soon as the Marines get there, they look down. They reach down into that hole. So Neller's standing next to me, and when he says, "How's it going?" And I looked at him and I said, "They're out." I said, "But sir, you got Marines all over the AO, right? And it's nighttime. If somebody hits an ID and gets killed because of this son of a bitch, you know, we should beat him to an inch of his life. We should do the same thing that's done to whoever gets killed looking for him or maimed looking for him to him. Somebody gets a leg amputated, he should get a leg amputated." And he looks at me and he goes, "Good thing you're not in charge of the map." And I said, "This is bullshit." I said, I said, "Look at these guys. Every step they're taking, they could be stepping on some shit." And he says, "I know." He said, "Keep your fingers crossed." I said, "Yeah, I will." And so, mercifully, thankfully, nobody got whacked that night. And so my intel guy, he controls the feeds, right? So we're watching one, I don't know which feed it's coming from, but we're watching one drone feed, and it's tracking this guy. And you see these Marines closing in on him. And as soon as they get to him, they reach down and they yank his ass out of that. And I said, "Change the feed." And like all heads snapped to me. It's like, "Look, I don't need all of us watching as they get to beat his ass, okay? I'm a team guy. They need to beat his ass. It's part of it." "All right, we're done here, sports fans. Back to work." Neller could walk by. He goes, "Well done. Well done." I said, "Thanks, sir." Nobody needs to tell me to get my secret decoder ring out and how to play the game. All right. Last story in the early bird. Experimental helicopter called the Raider cleared for full flight test program. All right. An experimental coaxial helicopter has met required objectives to move forward into its full flight test program with its second prototype after the first aircraft was sidelined following a hard landing last year, according to the company's vice president. Okay, so it's the Sikorsky S-97 Raider. Now, coaxial helicopter, that means it's got two blades. Operating the Raider for 90 minutes on Tuesday, pilots Bill Fell and John Groth completed the flight test card, marking a significant milestone that will allow Sikorsky to proceed with its full flight test program. This summer, the plan is to push the speed to above 200 knots, which is the next step in achieving speeds well over that benchmark. And then the rest of the article goes on to talk about the reasons why the hard landing. So that's a pretty fast helicopter, man. I'm not going to lie to you. All right. A couple other headlines that you should know about. State Department, Russia, Iran hedging their bets to back the Taliban. Russia and Iran are hedging their bets by backing the Taliban against other terrorists at the expense of Afghan central government, according to a State Department official who was testifying on Wednesday. Now, that should come as no surprise to anybody, right? That Russia and Iran would back the Taliban. All right. Ceasefire over U.S.-led coalition. We already talked about that 30 Afghan soldiers were killed. The president of South Korea is in Moscow today. According to American officials and the Associated Press, the North Korean side of the DMZ is now quiet, even peaceful. Let's not get over our skis, boys and girls, right? Let's not get over our skis. According to the website known as The Hill, Secretary Mattis is quoted as saying he is not aware of any North Korean steps being taken to denuclearize. Okay, and then in something that's not got a lot of play because of other news, Al Jazeera is reporting the exchange of Israeli air raids and Palestinian rockets over the Gaza border, right, has gotten more and more intense as Israel continues to carry out strikes in Gaza. Exactly. All right, and lastly, and then we'll get to Gunnar on. Commentary and analysis. If the U.S. military withdraws from Korea, China will be a big loser. And the thesis, because when you hear that, if the U.S. military withdraws from Korea, China will be the big loser. This is from the South China Morning Post. Michael Heng says, while Beijing has good reason to be wary of American hegemony in the region. And again, I mentioned earlier this week or last week that if you look at where we are, we have China pinned against their east coast. And they're trying to break that contain, right? That's what a lot of this is about. It must realize that a U.S. military withdrawal could encourage unwanted development, such as nuclear-armed neighbors in a unified Korea and Japan. Interesting. Japan, most assuredly. I'm not so sure Korea. Anyway, interesting article. Another one from Asia Times, sexy metal, the missing element of the Korean puzzle. Metals are certainly sexy for U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. It's quite enlightening to remember how Pompeo, the CIA director, told a Senate committee in May of 2017 how foreign control of rare earth metals was a very, very real concern. Many of those metals exist on the Korean Peninsula. We've been talking about something else that's going on right now that not widely covered in the news because of other things like the World Cup and our immigration catastrophe that plays out very publicly. Senator Dick Durbin saying the executive order is doomed. He's right. It is legally doomed. But nonetheless, it's buying time, evidently. What awaits Yemen after the Battle of Hodeida? Okay, there's currently a fight going on for Yemen's largest port. All right. The ultimate goal of the operation is that the port will be in Saudi hands and will force the Houthis to return to the negotiating table. So that's interesting. Because that is where Iran is using the Houthis to shoot missiles into Saudi Arabia, further destabilizing the region. And then the final one is a story in Washington Post. The headline is Vladimir Putin's Russia in decline? We figured out how to measure national power. Where does Russia stand as Vladimir Putin embarks on another six-year term as president? Analysts have been trying to figure out whether Russia has been rising or declining or stagnating since Putin ascended to power in 1999. And again, you know, we've talked about it on the program. And I want to see what this article has to say. And then I'll get Mikey Wonderboy on. You know what? I won't. I had to go to a different browser though, because I used up all my love in the All right, let me take a break, and then we'll talk about Vladimir Putin. Because I find that really interesting. Where is Russia as a nation? Are they in decline? Are they ascending? I mean, shit, if your economy is smaller than the economy of Canada, how in the hell does that work? How can you not be going up? Mike, lover of all things Russian, Vladimir Putin worshiper, he joins us next. Yeah. Think about it. Think about it, okay? give it some thought. More of Omri Radio coming up.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.